This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Welcome to the show. Holy cow. Another week. I was, this past week has been a long couple of months, eh? How about that? I have an awesome guest here for the show. And I think, this is a great time to talk about the things we're going to talk about. And so this is the founder of the award-winning Recombobulation Area, a favorite returning guest, Civics Media's own political editor, all-around good guy, my friend and yours, Dan Schaefer. What's up, buddy?
How you doing, Mark? What a week.
What a week it's been these last couple months.
Oh,
however
my
that
goodness.
Saying goes. But, dude, oh, my God.
Feels like a brief lifetime since a week ago, since your last show. My goodness.
Yeah, it's been fun. The reason that I wanted to talk to you really was about a tweet that you put out, and it's and I want to.
Oh no, you're digging up old tweets. This is gonna. You're gonna get me in trouble here. Is that what's going on? You're bringing me on the Rational Revolution to cancel me. Is that the deal, Mark?
Correct.
No, I'm just messing around.
So, but I do want to get into that hot and heavy because that I think that is a huge topic. But I want to talk about what's your impression of this first week? How's that been going? The old Trump administration.
Yeah, Donald Trump sworn in on Monday. He's the 47th president in the United States. It's right out of the gate. It's not great. It's not great, Mark.
No.
I think, there was obviously a flurry of activity on Monday, continuing throughout the week. But, a lot of really troubling stuff and a lot of, I can't say a lot of it's all that surprising, though, because it's just so much of the stuff that Trump ran on throughout his presidency about mass deportation, gearing up for mass deportations and pardoning the January 6th insurrectionists and taking all sorts of action on, energy and the environment and the economy and immigration and all these different things. I did a video earlier this week at Civic Media about birthright citizenship and just his attacks on the Constitution and the 14th Amendment there. It's been pretty discombobulating, I must say.
Right. And I was thinking about this is all of the stuff that we talked about and feared and all the reasons why we didn't support him in the first place. And then all of a sudden, it's like, well, maybe he won't. But then when he does something like, rules on gender and reducing the size of the federal workforce and birthright citizenship and all that, it's like, ah, crap. And then you feel that gut punch again and again and again. It's very discombobulating. And I don't know how do you come back from that,
Well, there's obviously always going to be an opportunity to recombobulate, Mark. But we are in a moment that is it feels pretty bleak for those of us who don't agree with Donald Trump, don't agree with the types of things that he wants to do as president. And yeah, I think what you're talking about too, because like throughout the campaign, he just says so much stuff.
Yeah.
Like Trump just, he would give these 2-hour rambling campaign speeches. He would go on these 3-hour bro podcasts and just like talk about whatever, and you don't know exactly what he's going to prioritize and all of that, but he's hitting the gas on a number of things. Immigration, obviously, I think he even said it in an interview this week that it was his number one top campaign issue,
right?
Was immigration. And that has been certainly in focus for the first few days of his presidency. And I think, the birthright citizenship one, I talked to an immigration attorney who's a friend of mine on that. And he said, this is the big one. This is the one that would really rewrite what it means to be an American. If you're, saying that if you're not born in this country, that you're not a citizen of this country, that that's really deeply troubling. And I think just fundamentally anti-American.
Yeah.
It's saying that people who are not born here do not have a chance to, you know, realize the American dream. And I think it is really, you know, just signals this kind of break this was one of the things I was that I did tweet about earlier this week. It's just like the last night of Biden's presidency, I tweeted something about, you know, this really does feel like the end of something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just a break from what the past has been. And I think, and you know, the past hasn't worked a lot, you know, for a lot of people for a really long time. And I think that's part of the, you know, kind of anti-establishment rhetoric that Trump was able to lean into and kind of force Democrats into this position of defending an establishment that didn't work for people. But I do also feel like, you know, we are in uncharted waters. We are in a new era. The old world is gone in a lot of ways.
Well, I mean, that almost certainly is going to be swatted down swiftly by, you know, a Supreme Court. And I mean, you would think, cause I mean, that's pretty clear cut in the Constitution. I mean, you can't do that.
Yeah. Well, but you know, congressional Republicans, I think, Wisconsin Republican Tom Tiffany among them, trying to take action to, I think they kind of characterized it as codifying the president's action on the 14th Amendment on birthright citizenship. And, you know, the interpretations of that, you know, could go to a court where many of the justices were appointed by Donald Trump and reinterpret the meaning of that amendment. And it's pretty worrying.
Well, what sucks, and people have asked, you know, how is someone so stupid able to get so many things done? I think like what happens is you have this tornado of word salad, and he says so many things and does so many things, and there's so many, every day there's something that's more offensive than the day before and all of that. And here we are forgetting the fact that, hey, you know, we're also, you know, very close to having a guy that doesn't believe in vaccines to be the head of our health departments, you know, and like that's now as insulting and as an affront it is. We're not, now that's old news. You know what I mean? So it's like, Right. That's how he's able to, that's how he governs with all of this chaos.
It's kind of that Steve Bannon quote about flooding the zone with blank, right? You know, and I think that certainly is the strategy, because if you put so much out there, there's only so much, you know, attention and I guess outrage, for lack of a better word, that can kind of go around on some of this stuff. And it just makes it so that instead of being able to focus on any one thing, it's just this wall of sound.
And
you just have to try your best to, you know, make sense of it or focus on a certain issue or whatever it might be. But it's just like the everything everywhere all at once.
Yeah, that's you know? Exactly how I've described it too, is that Phil Spector wall of sound. You know, and that's exactly what he is. It's crazy. And there was something yesterday that the federal government has asked agencies to give lists of new employees and everyone that's been employed for under a year, because then those people are easier to fire. My brother, who has been on the show a number of times, is in that ballpark. He's part of that. And so it's 200,000 people. Yes.
Yeah.
With that, I mean, is that going to happen? Are they going to lay people off? Because if they've been in that role for under a year, that's their probationary period. It's easier to terminate them. So like, I mean, 200,000 people, that would be like a 08 financial crisis level layoff. I mean, that's huge.
Crazy.
Yeah. And so, you know, And like, what's next? What's coming tomorrow, next week? What next month? What do we?
I mean, we've still got a number of these confirmation hearings that we're going to take a look at. You know, some of them are going to sail through pretty easily. Yeah, I think Marco Rubio was like a 99-0 vote in the Senate for confirming him
That's
for Secretary
cool
of State. But I think, you know, I think Sean Duffy is going to make it through pretty easily for his piece of it. There's your Wisconsin connection to the Trump cabinet there. Uh-huh. But I think, you know, with Hegseth, with RFK, with Tulsi Gabbard, I think those are kind of going to be the trickier ones. And then I think we're gonna see some action. You know, obviously immigration is gonna be kind of the main thing, right? And how this takes shape with, you know, deportations, with ICE raids that are, there's lots of rumors. You know, I live in Milwaukee. There's lots of rumors about that kind of thing right now. There were some false ones that got shot down earlier this week. But you know, there's a lot of heightened tension around all of that. And I think it's, you know, we'll just have to take things one day at a time. Well, I think that's all we can really do.
Yeah, and I think this is a good segue into the big discussion. But, you know, we talk about what Trump does and all this and how he manufactures the issue of, oh, we're being invaded and all of this stuff, and doesn't really tell the fact that on January 19th, border crossings were lower than what it was during the Trump administration. And so he's got to manufacture this issue of, okay, we're going to, you know, cook up a crisis that's not necessarily there. Now, Joe Biden and the Biden administration, they did not do a good job those first 3 years. But the last year, they really did a good job on the border.
I think it was so, but the kind of ping-ponging around to different policies, I just feel like the big picture of the Biden administration's policy on immigration was just kind of incoherent.
Yes.
Like they came in and said, okay, we're going to, you know, repeal all these ridiculous Trump administration executive orders. We're going to bring, you know, we're going to, you know, bring together the families who were separated. We're going to take action on this and that. We're going to repeal the Remain in Mexico. And then they kind of, you know, obviously a lot of people, they had a lot of trouble with the border there. It was just kind of all over the place when that crisis really ramped up.
They were slow to act.
They were slow to act. And I think they also, and I think this is a problem for Democrats more broadly, is just they never articulated a coherent, I don't want to say narrative, but like policy or idea of like what they really wanted to do on immigration. And I think in the absence of really getting out there and saying we're doing things, you know, it kind of left Republicans to fill that space. And they really won on that issue in a really big way in the 2024 election. And I think part of it was because Democrats, instead of wanting to have the argument and put forth a policy, articulate really where they stand on the issue, I think they just wanted to change the subject. And I think that can be a problem for Democrats a lot of the time, where they are, you know, only feel comfortable talking about the issues that poll in their favor, right? Whether it's, you know, reproductive rights or healthcare or some of these bread and butter Democratic issues that they have, you know, focused on for a long time, and not without reason. But like, if immigration is emerging as the top issue in the campaign, like all they really did was kind of like put forth these, oh, we're the ones that really are trying to get it done, kind of like these Republican light types of policies on the border. And I just think the voters just didn't buy it. And I think that was a problem.
We're going to recombobulate on the other end of the break here with our friend Dan Schaefer, political editor for Civic Media. I'm Mark Becker. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
What's up? We're back. Mark Becker here, Rational Revolution. We've got Dan Schaefer. I'm so glad you guys are here. This is, you know, it's weird. I was at a weekend away with my family, and we were at Blue Harbor Resort, and someone, this is weird because I've never had this happen before. I was getting a pizza at the old place, you know, in the hotel, and someone came up to me and was like, I know who you are. And I'm like, okay, cool. And it was from the show. So like, holy crap. That's cool.
That's great.
I know, right?
That's great.
So we're reaching
getting
people.
It out there. Absolutely.
Yeah, so they're like,
that's wonderful.
It's like, you're Mark Becker. I'm like, I am not, you know, I am no celebrity, ma'am.
But, I've had that happen to me a few times in around Milwaukee, and it's you know, I'm going to keep saying it, discombobulating.
Right. Knocks you on your heels for a little bit. So at the risk of overstating something, because sometimes I do that, but I believe that this topic that we're going to touch on now, and I want to talk about this for a long, long time, I think that this question is the central point that Democrats need to answer. This is something that they're going to grapple with for a long time. And I think it's going to impact people in 2 years. I think it's going to impact people in 4 years. All of this. Was Kamala's message wrong? Because her message and Biden's were very different, right? And this is kind of what why I wanted you on, because you tweeted out, I still don't think many Democrats have fully internalized how much damage Joe Biden and everything surrounding his age has done to the credibility of the party at large. And so I think these questions are really intertwined, because there was an article from the New York Times that talked about the six people that protected Joe Biden, from his wife to his, you know, their publicist and all of those things. And, you know, so I think the knee jerk reaction, and I've met with people because I've been asked to run for a pretty big office here in a couple of years, and I'm going to be dealing with this too. They say, oh, well, we lost on the economy. We lost on this. They didn't connect with voters. It's like, but I don't think that Kamala Harris's message was the wrong one. I think Joe Biden's was, not only because he was old, but remember the whole, it's working. It's working. Tell that to the person whose rent tripled over the last 5 years. Tell that to the mom who works 55 hours a week and can't buy groceries. Mm-hmm. Kamala Harris's message was about, this is basic human decency. And that's what's on the ballot. And I know you're struggling. I hear you. We can fix that too. We need to focus on this, you know, red alarm danger that we're looking at right now. And Republicans say, oh, you know, this is, we've got this mandate. There's a couple thousand votes in some really important states. There's no mandate.
Yeah. Well, I think the mandate that they're looking at, too, I think part of that just comes from the fact that, look, this is the first time the Republicans have won the popular vote in 20 years.
But they didn't. Trump was 49.8%.
And not
a plurality. Yeah, right.
Yes, not a landslide. So there's that. But I think, just to get back to your question about Biden and the tweet I had about that, you know, I think Harris, you know, did a lot of really good things in her campaign, but it was a 107-day campaign. Mm-hmm. And I think the hole that Joe Biden put the Democrats in, first by choosing to run for a second term to begin with, but mm-hmm. also just going all the way up through the debate. And I think that my problem with, I think what I was tweeting about there really goes back to that debate. Because yeah. I think when you're Joe Biden and he is, you know, made cornerstones of his campaign, running this campaign on honesty and integrity.
Yes.
It's really hard to run a campaign based around those types of values when you are asking people to deny the evidence of their eyes and ears.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he did with that debate. And I think that really crystallized it for a lot of people. You know, myself included.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That I, you know, wasn't really paying that close attention. I was just like, Republicans are kind of winding themselves up over this like they always do and blah, blah, blah. But that debate.
But it was always there. That was like a thing that's like, oh, boy, is he? I hear him speak.
And, you know, my job is to cover state and local politics. And that's what I do at the Recombobulation Area and Civic Media. So I don't really, you know, focus on the national nearly as much as, you know, I write a lot more about Robin. For the next four years, I'm going to be writing a lot more about Robin Voss than
I do
about Donald Trump.
Fun fact. I had like a year long Words with Friends game with Robin Voss going on. So
seriously,
I swear to God. Yeah. I know him pretty well. Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's another conversation that we can have. Yeah. But just, while we're trying to stay on topic, I guess here.
Sorry.
I just think the debate made it. When I watched that debate and after that debate, I was just like, well, the election's over.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I watched that and I was like, well, there's no chance Joe Biden is winning this campaign. And either they find somebody else, or if they try to go through with this, it's going to be the dominant message. And I was at the. So it's just like in the weeks following the debate, Biden did the interview with George Stephanopoulos, which happened to be in Madison.
Yeah.
It was the day after the 4th of July, I want to say. And I went to Madison to cover Biden's speech at that point. And I was talking to a lot of people before the speech, like in the audience, like, what do you think? Like, you know, should he still be the candidate? Do you think he should drop out? And everybody's just walking on eggshells. Like I'm asking, you know, people like Ben Wickler, Democrats in the audience, everybody's just like, you know, it wasn't a great debate, but we support Joe. We agree with his policies. We don't want Donald Trump, yada, yada. And I even talked to one, you know, audience member at that rally who said, I'm kind of hoping he makes an announcement that he's not going to be the candidate. That he would do that, you know, at a campaign style rally in Madison. And then, you know, just a few weeks later, I was at Kamala Harris's first rally as the presumptive candidate that she held in West Allis, Wisconsin. And it was just night and day.
The oh, my energy. God. Yeah.
So it just felt like, you know, it was people were just absolutely waiting for something different. And I think Biden was, you know, he's leaving office as the most worse approval rating than Donald Trump after January 6th.
Yeah.
Like we need to be clear-eyed and face reality about this. You know, even those of us who agreed with a lot of Joe Biden's policies and a lot of what he did as president, you know, I think his decision to run again and to not kind of pass the torch, you know, he never actually said it in his 2020 campaign, but he certainly alluded to it, saying that he was going to be a bridge to the next generation.
Yeah. He was a transitional candidate.
He was a transitional candidate and all these different things. And he decides to run again. And it's like, okay, we'll see. And I think it just there weren't enough people speaking out at the time. And I think that is just it's going to create a real credibility problem for Democrats because, you know, people know what it looks like when somebody's old. It's not, you know, this isn't some sort of deep in the weeds policy. This is people just trusting the evidence of their eyes and ears. And I think if people are, you know, saying, listening to the Democrats saying, yes, Joe Biden's fine and whatever, people are going to start questioning other things that the Democrats are saying too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is part of just the overall credibility problem that Democrats face when it comes to the age. I was at the RNC.
Well, we got to catch a break here with Dan Schaefer here. We're going to hold that thought because we'll be right back here on the Irrational Revolution.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
I love this song as I wear my Boston Red Sox hat. I hope they sign that dude from the Tigers. He's good. Anyway, as we're recording this, I just got a news thing here that the first crack in that the test for the birthright citizenship, a judge in Seattle signed a temporary restraining order blocking the executive order on birthright citizenship. So here we go. You were talking about you were at the RNC, Mr. Dan Schaefer here, political editor for Civic Media, the chief grand poobah of the recombobulation area.
Yeah, so I was talking about the immediate aftermath of the Joe Biden's debate.
I was at
the RNC in Milwaukee, covering the convention there, talking to lots of folks, and it just, you know, it just felt like Republicans were just spiking the football.
Oh yeah,
like they thought this was over.
Yeah.
And I think it just you know, people were just kind of scoffing at any, you know, anything about Joe Biden. And then, you know, there was a lot of us, you know, kind of like in Wisconsin media, in, you know, the kind of like left of center media that made its way into the RNC, like myself, you know, just having these conversations about like, what's going to happen next? And is Biden going to continue to be the candidate? And there were so many of the like kind of Democratic politicians like in and around Milwaukee, Cavalier Johnson, David Crowley, folks like that who were going to bat for Joe Biden and talking about how he's the candidate. And it just it was really frustrating from my standpoint and saying just like this clearly isn't going to work.
Yeah.
So why are you tying yourselves to this unpopular candidate who is clearly not fit to do this for another 4 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it just the way that, you know, I was writing about this with Biden at the time after that Madison rally and whatever else, it was just there was so many people on the left who were saying that, like, the media is making too big of a deal out of this and whatever it might be. And it's just, I don't think that was the case.
No,
I don't think he was up to the task to run in that campaign. And in even, you know, comments from Biden, even within the last few weeks, alluding to the fact, oh, he thinks he still could have won.
Yes.
I think that is absolute BS. I think the way, you know, the switch to Harris, obviously didn't work for the presidency, but I think there are a number of Senate races that go towards Republicans. I think Eric Hovde would have beat Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin had Joe Biden remained 100%. On the ticket.
Yep.
I think if you look at close races in, you know, Arizona and Nevada and Michigan, some of these other places that had really close Senate races go the Democrats' way, I think Republicans would have won those races too. And I think it would have been an out and out landslide in the House for Republicans. And now they have, you know, a slim majority. I think down ballot too. I think, you know, some of the polling type numbers that I've heard about from like state Senate races and state assembly races when Biden was still on the ticket, they're going door to door trying to make the case that, hey, okay, well, Biden's old and unpopular, but I'm not, you know,
right.
I'm different. I'm at the bottom of the ticket. And I think it just was not going to work. And I think instead of like the kind of 18 to 15 breakdown we're seeing in the Wisconsin state Senate now, I think the Republicans would have been close to a supermajority again.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would have been just an absolute down ballot bloodbath for Democrats had the switch not been made. So I think that's why I think people are not as frustrated with, you know, Kamala Harris and the race that she ran, because I think we were going from a standpoint where with Joe Biden, I think there was a next to zero chance after
lambs
that debate,
to the slaughter,
that,
I think
that he was going to win, that Democrats were going to, you know, win control of the House or anything like that, to giving Democrats a fighting chance. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, there are aspects of her campaign that I disagreed with that maybe didn't go well. But I think you have to, you know, I'm kind of giving her the benefit of the doubt on some of this, because it was a 107-day campaign where they were running to begin with a next to 0% chance of winning.
Well, and that's the question that I think we really have to focus on, because we could look at the, you know, oh my gosh, well, you know, the message was wrong here. Well, I really don't know that it was. It's just she had 107 days to make that case.
I do think that she did not go far enough to really articulate how she would be a different president than Biden.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah.
Because I think, you know, there was that interview, I think it was on The View or something like that, where she said, they asked, like, what would you do differently? And she said, I don't know if there's anything that I would do all that differently. And I think she just didn't put enough distance between herself and Biden. And I think that was maybe the biggest mistake of the campaign, is to not really point to some sort of new direction. And it was, you know, we're talking about the new way forward and we're not going back and all of that. I think she had the opportunity to say, we're going to do things a little bit differently with a Harris presidency than the Biden presidency, but she just tied herself to Biden, who was just this anchor. And then, like, right at the end of the campaign, he makes that nonsense comment about, you know, the Trump supporters are garbage, or just however that was interpreted. And then Trump rolls into Green Bay in the garbage truck all of that. And it just becomes this really simple, easy rallying cry. And it's just like, thanks again, Joe.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, I think there are a lot of people on the left, again, who I agree with in a lot of ways, who are talking about like the achievements that Biden made and talking about his presidency. I think the last few months of his presidency have to be seen as a failure because he did not accomplish his main objective, was to stop Donald Trump from returning to the White House.
He failed,
which, you know, he did in 2020, but he didn't do this year. And I think, you know, there's this quote that I like about the legacies of leaders, where people are remembered by the sum of their accomplishments, but defined by their singular failure. Mm-hmm. And Joe Biden's singular failure came in the 2024 election. He's, you know, he has a 50 years in public service that he's going to be remembered for in this country as the vice president, as the president, as a longtime leader in the Senate. But his defining failure, you know, happened in, within the last year here.
Because he was the guy that brought Donald Trump back.
He was the guy that brought Donald Trump back. And I think I have a lot of, you know, when I think about Joe Biden's presidency, it's a really, really frustrating final few months. And then, you know, we can talk about the pardons, some of the other actions that he took in the final stretch there that I just thought were absolutely ridiculous.
Well, it was surreal because that day I was texting with someone who received a pardon.
Yeah. Okay.
And I asked him, I was like, did you know about this? He's like, dude, I slept in. I woke up to my phone exploding and telling me that I didn't want one. I didn't want one because I didn't do anything wrong. Yeah. And it's not a Biden family member, it was a member of the January 6th committee. And he said that he had no idea that it was coming. He didn't want one. And he's like, I welcomed that fight.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's so like, it is frustrating because I see, I have so much respect for Biden, but I see a little bit of that Ron Johnson, you know, hey, I believe in term limits. I'm only going to be here for two terms. And there he is. And here's Joe Biden. I'm the transitionary candidate. And we're going to, you know, pass the torch and all of that. And if I think he did that, my God.
And it's one thing to do that. And it's one thing to do that on its face. But when you have built your reputation on honesty and integrity and being a person of character, that's when the house of cards starts to really, really fall apart. And I think that is kind of what I was getting at about that credibility problem that he just has continued to make worse. Yeah. You know, you can play the clips of him saying he's not going to pardon his family members. Yeah. He's not going to pardon Hunter. He's not going to pardon, you know, members, preemptive pardons about like Fauci or Liz Cheney or whoever it might be. And then he just goes ahead and does it on his way out the door. I thought it was a really shameful final act for Joe Biden as president.
I don't necessarily mind, you know, Fauci and even though they didn't want it, the January 6th committee, I don't mind that because they did all of the right things, and it doesn't matter with that crowd. It doesn't matter with Donald Trump, as you've seen him take away protections from, you know, his national security advisor and Pompeo and all of that, even though they have like death threats from Iran. And here's, you know, we'll pull your, like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter with that guy. And that's why it's like, okay, so going forward, what's the message? I mean, you hate to say that they're two are related, but Tony Evers, I mean, you know, he's part of that party. He's part of the loss of credibility. What does he do? How does he come, you know, back from this? What about someone who wants to run for a federal office? I mean, up and down the board, they're going to have to address some of these things and address, you know, because I had a meeting with someone that was like, oh, well, Democrats, and we got to work on economics. We have to have this message and that message. And we got to, and it's like, hey, hold on. And then we can't talk about Trump. We can't always talk about Trump. And it's like at the federal level, I really believe that it's about decency. It is about decency. And I don't think you really can miss on economics because other than this election, the Democrats economically were pretty darn good. And people bought into that, from union workers to minorities to, you know, middle income folks. They believed it. We just got away from it.
But Trump won the working class.
I know,
in this
right.
Election.
Right.
And just like the Trump, you know, won with a lot of the voters that Democrats had historically been strong with. And maybe this changes, but I think it's wild that, like, you know, Donald Trump, who lived his life in a gilded tower right. in New York City,
he knows their struggle.
Is the man of the working class. Right. So I think that is part of the problem that Democrats face.
How do they get that back?
You take a look at the inauguration, like you have all of the richest people in human history in front of, even seated in front of Trump's cabinet appointees.
Right.
Like, that's a pretty easy message for Democrats to look at and say, like, you know, he's siding, you know, with the wealthy. He may campaign as this populist change agent or, you know, going to do things differently, man of the working class type stuff. But when he gets in office, it's just catering to those types of folks, to Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg, who he had in the front row for his inauguration. Like, I think there was also like the CEO of TikTok sitting next to Tulsi Gabbard and like whatever else it was. And so I think that's a pretty easy message for Democrats to be able to run on going forward. And I think, you know, getting back to some of the bread and butter economic issues that Democrats have focused on. But I think you're right. I think because, you know, they're running as the incumbent party, it's hard to run, you know, as an individual of change. And you know, people didn't like what's happening, and it's, you know, they voted for change. I kind of wonder if we're entering this era now. We had a lot of two-term presidencies for a while in the country. I kind of wonder if we're going to get just kind of people upset with the status quo, upset with the system, and things are just going to kind of ping pong back and forth for a little while. Because, you know, because things are so gridlocked at the congressional level, and people are just kind of have this anti-incumbent energy across the country, because we're just not getting things done for the American people anymore. It's just not happening.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. And we got a minute left here, but what do the Democrats need to do to kind of get their place back?
Well, you said I've got a minute left for that, right? So we could go a whole nother hour.
Yeah.
You know, I think they got to change the way they talk to people. I think you got to stop having these kind of like very precious, safe, canned, inauthentic conversations and just talk to people again. And I think that's part of I think it's a media strategy as much as anything that needs to change for the Democrats.
Yeah, it's going to be wild and. Yeah, I don't know. It really is an interesting time, and I agree with you on your ideas about what Biden did to the party. I don't know how. I said last week history will be kind to his legacy, and I think up until the last few months of his presidency, I think it will. But I do. Yeah, I agree that it's complicated at the end there. Dan Schaefer, thank you so very much for joining us here on the Rational Revolution. We'll have you back in a couple weeks, I think, because we'll have more to talk about. I want to talk about the state stuff, too.
I know. We got so much state politics to talk about. It's a big year for that. So,
yes, yeah, let's absolutely do that. Thank you so much. We'll be back with my thoughts right after this.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
We sang every song that Javi knew. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing. I mean, nothing.
That's a good song. Sometimes it's worth re-mentioning, but that song is a tip of the cap to our old friend Chris Alfheim, who's dutifully serving in the Wisconsin State Senate now, and that was her anthem, and so we still play it every episode as kind of a tip to her. You know, I have to thank Dan Schaefer for coming. He's really a wealth of knowledge, and you know, he says, I cover state and local, but he's got a lot of knowledge and opinions that are typically right about the national stuff. I thought it was interesting to hear him talk a little bit about how the Democrats have to change how they talk to people. And it's my idea is, and it could be a theory that's wrong, but I don't think that Harris, other than not being strong enough on what I would do differently from Joe Biden, I don't think that her message was wrong because she went from, you know, Biden being in the low 40s and having a historically low approval rating to raising over $1 billion and coming within a few thousand votes of the presidency in 107 days. Like that is a remarkably stellar job. And I, you know, we talk about Biden's message of it's working. Well, yeah, no, it's not. It's not working. And Democrats can't be afraid to talk about Donald Trump. And if we're going to, as Dan Schaefer said, if we're going to change how we talk to people, hit them right between the eyes, then it's one of those things where it's like, say the thing, say the thing. And what I'm nervous about is Democrats up and down the ballots not punching right between the eyeballs and being so afraid of we don't want to make it all about Trump. We don't want to talk about Trump. We don't say the thing. Say the thing. Because when we say the thing, what that thing is it is, if we're not going to talk about Trump, it's Trumpism. It's the idea that it's all or nothing. It's the idea that, hey, this is my way or you are the enemy. It's the idea that truth doesn't matter. It's the idea that decency doesn't matter. If you don't want to talk about Trump, don't talk about Trump, but talk about the poison that he has injected into our political, you know, spectrum. Because what he's done is he's taken people who do have decency. Elise Stefanik used to talk about how she hates Donald Trump and she doesn't like what he's done to the Republican Party. And here she is, now a nominee of the cabinet, that trips over herself to compliment the guy. And here you have someone in our neck of the woods in the 8th Congressional District, in Congressman Tony Weed, who beat two seasoned Republicans, not because people thought, oh my God, he's such a great candidate, but because he put Donald Trump's name on his yard sign. I'm Trump endorsed Tony Weed. He won the Republican primary because of that. Not because anyone knew who the hell he was or what he stood for. And so that's my one thing that I think it's a big asterisk. And it's something that we really need to focus on, because if and I agree with Dan, change how we talk to people, hit them right between the eyes. Donald Trump does it. But when we hit them right between the eyes, we have to be honest about what this is. And I think that Trumpism idea goes up and down the ballot from national to state to local. Local here in town, there's a guy that ran for county board and won, and he dresses up as Donald Trump and goes to like parades and stuff, and he ran as an independent. It's like, dude, come on. And then, you know, the local news does a fluff story on this guy's going traveling thousands of miles to hopefully meet Trump. We have to talk and say things for what it is, because what he did was he took decency and he threw it out the window. And so now people from state assembly to state senate to, you know, statewide office to national, they have to feel like they have to emulate that. And then by emulating that, decency goes out the window even further. So then you have, you know, Robin Voss, even though he doesn't have the majority that he used to have, governing like he does. Like he has that super majority that I can do whatever you want. Or, you know, he thinks that he still has that mentality to tell the old minority leader in open session in front of God and everybody, you don't matter. 10 years ago, that never would have happened. Well, maybe in Wisconsin it would have, because we have our gerrymandered districts. But 15 years ago, that wouldn't have happened. But here we are, because that poison is injected into our politics at every level. All of that is gone. It's gone. And we have to be honest about these discussions, because, and I think, you know, yeah, Democrats, they did lose the working class voters, But I don't think it's, I don't think that's a lost cause either. We have to tell it for what it is. Decency's gone. I can be that person. And I know you're struggling. We can fix that too. But first, we have to get to a place in our politics where we can sit down at a table and not talk about the enemy. You're the enemy. You're the enemy of the people. What? And for Kamala Harris's sake, she had a coalition that stretched from Dick freaking Cheney to AOC. You can't tell me that that's something that is not remarkable. It is. Raised $1 billion. That message of, hey, we have to talk about what this is. We have to talk about the dangers of this type of politics. That is a huge message. That has to be a huge message. Because it's not only dangerous for our communities, it's dangerous for our country. You know, adversaries will see how divided we are, and they'll see that, hey, all we have to do is flood the zone with this wall of sound like Donald Trump does, and then truth is gone, decency's gone, and the American people will start dividing and fighting each other. That's what's happening. We have to stop that. And it's up to us in these conversations that we have with friends and neighbors and relatives and all of that. I say this every week. It's up to us to not agree to disagree, but stand up to that. Keep that going. Keep that going, friends. It's such an honor to be here. My thanks to Civic Media. Thanks to our friend Dan Schaefer. Thanks to the best producer in the history of producers, Amanda, behind the glass. We'll see you next week on The Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. Take care.
Yes, how many deaths will it take?
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.